caught in self-centered dream, only suffering, is the first line of the four practice principles. When the Buddha speaks of the characteristics of reality, one way he articulates it is as the three marks or aspects of existence. Impermanence, non-self, unsatisfactoriness. Of course, that's in English, and I'll talk a little about how we translate it in Sanskrit. It's Trilakshana, Anicca, Anattam, Dukkha. Now, these aren't really three different things, but they're three facets, we could say, three facets of this that is our life, this ongoing change. In fact, there's a nice phrase from the sixth ancestor, which says, ongoing change is Buddha nature. Ongoing change, impermanence, is everything we encounter, everything we are. And because everything we are is always changing, if we want it to be otherwise, then it will inherently always be dukkham, which could be translated as suffering. That's one traditional way. Another way is unsatisfactory. Not that this life reality is unsatisfactory, but if we want it to be other than it is, then can't help but be unsatisfactory, because it won't be other than it is. It won't be other than impermanent. And being impermanent means it won't fit the way I want it to be. And this I want it to be is the other aspect, meaning I, whether it's I, me, I, others, I, things, in the sense of self is inherently not fixed, separate, permanent, meaning that it's not inherently separate from anything, everything else. It is nothing but the interplay of this, if we say, interbeing, interdependent, everything changing. Now, the reason the Buddha speaks of the three marks of existence is to enable us to clarify it in our own life so that we need not suffer, live in unsatisfactoriness, because of our misunderstanding, misconstruction of what this life is. What this life of joyousness is. See, we don't realize our life is joyous if we insist that what's impermanent should be permanent. Doesn't matter if the permanent is so-called this body-mind condition. Permanent could be, I was feeling so good and now all of a sudden I'm feeling achy, in pain. Oh, it's not supposed to be this way, even on that simple level. Guaranteed we make trouble for ourselves. Or on much more fundamental levels. So the Buddha talks about this in many ways, in many of the sutras. One sutra where the Buddha talks about this, he talks about the four ways that people, meaning us, come to realize the truth of impermanence, because this is so vital, because seeing the truth of impermanence enables us to be free of the suffering or of the unsatisfactoriness that we impose on this joyous, satisfactory life that we are. We impose, and that's the phrase, caught in self-centered dream. So the Buddha talks about what, in a way, is a fundamental human issue which we all face, called death. That's the most immediate, intimate way that we see impermanence, despite the fact that we don't want to see it. Despite the fact that much of human activity is designed to avoid it, or as some psychologists call it, terror management theory. Human activity is terror management theory, a way to avoid this so-called terror called inevitable death, and doing all sorts of things which, of course, we often get into trouble with, to avoid this. Nevertheless, the Buddha's teaching is the importance of seeing it for what it is, but first seeing it. So the Buddha talks about people who come to practice realizing the truth of impermanence. First, he talks about those who realize this when someone in a distant village dies and they hear of it. See, until then, if we could imagine such a thing, people don't really get that there's this impermanence. Then he says, two is when there's a death in your own village. 3 is when there's a death in your own home, and 4 when you begin to realize that you will die. And he talks about different ways, different kinds of people who, in a sense, allow this whip of realizing what's so to encourage us to practice. Encourage us to practice means encourage us to really embrace our life and see what our life truly is, and more importantly, see where we create trouble where there need not be trouble. Except that we impose conditions and expectations, impose our self-centered dream on this that is our life. So, and there's, the Buddha has a comparison with some of you might be familiar with, which Dogen Zenji cites in the Shobo Genzo, of 4 kinds of horses that run on how the whip is used. In other words, some that run when the whip is just touches them. When they see the shadow of the whip. The second run when the whip touches their hair. The third run when the whip touches the flesh. And the fourth only when the whip has penetrated to the bone. And then that's, in a sense, is like the person who hears of the distant death and so forth. But even then, at least, they have a sense of impermanence, death. But there's all sorts of deaths. We could have a little death when we don't get invited to a party that we think we should get invited to. When a job that we should have gotten, we didn't get. Or when a car that we had got totaled by a hit and run while it was parked in front of our house. Or, and you could fill in the various ors from our life, ways that impermanence, this ongoing change that is our life, is something that we refuse to accept, but would rather be unsatisfied, upset, suffer about, than be joyous in the present moment, embracing the fact that yes, things change, and for some reason the circumstances of the universe, of the beings of the universe that is our life, the circumstances of interdependence come together in this moment as, and you fill in the as, whether the as is I'm in physical pain, I have this illness, whether the as is something I believe should be, isn't, or whether the as is, and then you could fill in all sorts of, could be something as simple as having planned this morning to go out on a picnic and the universe presented us with a rainstorm. We can become very upset dissatisfied or that. Or we have a sports team that we cheer from, and the universe presented us with, instead of them winning, they lost, they got trounced. And right there, out of the joyous universe life that we are, suffering occurs. Because the universe of permanence, our team winning, my team winning, me winning with my team, manifests ongoing change. Of course, another facet of ongoing change is the non-self. But we'll talk a little bit more about that facet tomorrow. This impermanence is fundamental importance for all of us, which is why people can talk about it. Even psychologists talk about it in terms of so-called terror management theory. And if we want to make a big deal of it, we can. But of course, one aspect of the fear of death is our misunderstanding of what our life is. See? Our misunderstanding of what our life is, because we believe our life is this bag of skin and bones. And of course, this bag of skin and bones is impermanent. And we know this as soon as we are two or three, most humans, in somewhere in the back of their being, have gotten a sense that there is such a thing called death. Mostly it's a little bit at a distance, and then at some point, as we get a little older, we see it closer and closer. Impermanence is the simple fact of this that we are, this what we can call Buddha nature, this that we could call the universe. Neither good nor bad, except if we want to be 2 minutes ago or 5 minutes in the future of how it should be, as opposed to the ongoing change manifesting right now. And this is exactly what our practice offers us, the opportunity to be, if I use a fancy word, this true nature that is our life, right now, of the universe that's joyous, that's manifesting right now perfectly as this life. Except if we add on, this isn't the way I want it to be, caught in self-centered dream. Caught in self-centered thoughts, caught in self-centered feeling. In the Diamond Sutra, which some of you might be familiar with, there's a little phrase that the Buddha is said to have spoken, we don't have to worry about the historicalness of it, nor do we have to be concerned about the particular way I am translating it into English. There's other versions. So the Diamond Sutra chapter 32 has the Buddha saying, "So I say to you, this is how to contemplate our conditioned existence in this fleeting world, like a dewdrop, a bubble, a flash of lightning, a phantom, or a dream. So all conditioned existence is to be seen." Of course, conditioned existence means this interdependence that is us, that is our life, and that is who we encounter, what we encounter, what we encounter in thoughts, feelings, sensations, experiences, like a dream. Now, like a dream's not bad. Shouldn't take it in dream as a negative, except as it's interconnected with this dukkha. This dukkha is the unsatisfactoriness or the suffering, and in Sanskrit the opposite of that is sukha. So in a way you could translate that as satisfactoriness or joyousness, if I stretch it. See? So what do we do? What do we do when we realize something is a dream? How is it different than the way we live our life ordinarily? Think of it just in terms of ordinary language. When you say that's a dream, or when you literally wake up from a dream and realize, oh, that's just a dream. Reflect for a moment. Reflect for a moment if you had a dream that you lost all your money. You lost your job. You were falling from an airplane. And then you wake up, it's just a dream. Or you were diagnosed that having 30 days to live. It's just a dream. So you could pick, create a situation that would be relevant for you. But when you say to yourself, when you realize for yourself, when you hear for yourself, it's just a dream, what then happens with our otherwise automatic reactive habits, reactions to our likes and dislikes, to our anger and fear? Of course, those things that cause us suffering, dissatisfactions. What happens when you say, oh, that's a dream? One thing, and we can speak more of it, but one thing, of course, is that you don't have to hold on to your fears, the consequence reactions. You don't have to be angry with someone who's said something or done something to you in a dream, since obviously it's just a dream. Right? I hope so. There are people and cultures where people do become angry with someone if in the dream someone said something or did something to them. But let us not have to deal with that right now. But we do know dreams also don't have to, quote, make sense. And we don't always have to look to all the aspects of it. Of course, we can look at it and see, what can I learn from this, clarify, because dreams are, of course, another aspect of our life. But if we consider it a dream, then certainly it's not a basis for taking a gun, a knife, and going after someone. It's not a basis for no longer speaking to someone, because in a dream they said such and such to us, or didn't say such and such to us. Conditioned existence means this existence where everything that arises is this ongoing change that's interdependent, interbeing. This moment that the universe comes together as right now. The whole universe. See? The whole universe is right now. All the forces, but we don't have to know what they are. But of course, it's right now. Whether, if we want to tease it out, we can tease it out in all sorts of ways. But the focus for us here now has to do with practice. But even more so, practice has to do with where we create unsatisfactoriness or suffering, whichever way we want to, or various other ways to translate that, in life, create harm for ourselves and for others where it need not be, where it's just a product of our misconstruing impermanence to be permanent, misconstruing reality to create difficulties, caught is the misconstruing. Caught is misconstruing, not because we want to, not because we even notice that we're doing it, but because it's such a habit that we've grown with and are so sure is right, which is exactly why we need to hear, no, it's not the way you misconstrue it. See, that's why, in a sense, these three marks of existence are considered fundamental Buddhist teaching. Other things, in a sense, are reflections and elaborations of those fundamental points. The fundamental point that's accessible for all of us, not because we have some special knowledge, but because we attend to what's so all the time. See, attending to what's so doesn't matter, we need some special beliefs. Impermanence or ongoing change or ongoing interdependence being change is evident to all of us if we look closely. And the Buddha's teaching and our practice is to enable us to look and be closely the experiencing of this moment, not just in our thoughts and conceptually, but in our very life. And out of tasting that, out of experiencing experience, that's sort of extra, but I'll say it that way, we get to taste for ourselves what our life is. Then we need not have unsatisfactoriness, suffering, harming, because the drivers of those aren't there any longer. Just as knowing that something's a dream, we need not suffer over it. Knowing that something was just a bubble that bubbled up and then dissipated. It's a drop of dew that was beautiful or ugly or whatever, but it's now gone. nothing negative, but just the opposite. It's enriching for us to sense that this is the way our life is, because then we can truly be this dewdrop moment, this dance dream of the moment as it is. Because it's, if I use fancy words, selfless, joyous. It's, if I use another word, beyond time of coming and going. Can't be anywhere else, just right here. I want to talk more about this second aspect of these remarks, this self or selfless or non-self. See, of course, the three marks, often it's put as anicca, dukkham, anattam, which is impermanence or ongoing change, unsatisfactoriness, non-self. But it doesn't make a difference how you list them or how we list them or how we look at them, since they're in a sense three facets of the very same thing. And even though they seem to be three different, if you look through one you see the other right there, and they're all connected. So I want to stop now, and maybe we could explore this together as our practice, if you, as our life, as our ongoing session. If you wish to change your position, please do. So it might be a little difficult. Yes.
So these three facets, you know, which we're all very familiar with.
Yes.
Is the facets of something that is just that's the thing there, that's just the Buddhist kind of, but I don't know what that thing is.
No, it's not the thing there, it's here. See, it's this thing here that's our life, that's your life. And you don't need to know what it is. In a way, the only way to know is to be it. Then out of that comes knowing aspects of it and articulating, if I say it that way, as is appropriate, as you can and do. But we don't really know this, even though you can say, oh yeah, there's these three, and we can discover how quickly we jump into, that's not impermanent, that's supposed to be this way. That's, in a sense, how practice keeps revealing how much we insist that those aren't the way it's supposed to be. Supposed to be. That's the point of caught and self-centered. Caught.
So even though stuff like that will come up, if we notice it, is that working on being not
yes.
caught?
Yes. That's our opportunity of experiencing this as is, as opposed to as we think it should be, as our theory. Our theories are, there's nothing wrong with the theories we have. That's just being human, is that these reactive habits of not wanting to face what we think would be terrifying, not wanting to encounter death because it's terrifying from the point of view of self to encounter death. It's terrifying to encounter things changing that we thought, well, that's not going to change till I'm done with using it, whatever that is, or till I'm done being it. I mean, I will keep my job relationship until I'm ready to say I'm going to retire, or till I'm ready to say, okay, we're done. Or, and it goes on all sorts of levels. See? The point is to see how natural it seems to us to say there's something wrong if this doesn't continue the way, or this does continue despite the fact that I wanted it to stop and it was supposed to stop.
So if I notice something like that happening and I'm still...
Who's noticing is your practice, to look. Your practice is to look who's saying this shouldn't happen, or this should happen.
Yeah, but then then there's this noticing going on.
Yeah.
And it's still, I feel this... discombobulated about
good.
That noticing. It.
Feel discombobulated. That's fine.
So I feel like I'm not being liberated, I'm not liberating myself. If that
oh, happens. You mean discombobulated isn't supposed to happen? See, you now got this new permanent word called liberated that I'm supposed to be. The new liberated self that you're creating despite the fact that it's ongoing change non-self, if I use that kind of expression. If we have a daydream about how we're supposed to be and reality doesn't fit the daydream and we insist it's supposed to be the daydream, well, what do you get? You go into the bank and you tell them, I dreamed that I had $5,000 in this account. Why don't you give me the $5,000? Well, first I'll tell you please leave or something. And if you start getting obstreperous, if you start insisting in a troublesome way, well, what will be the next thing that will happen?
I'll cart you off.
But we do that. We do that with ourself. I'm not supposed to make these mistakes. I'm not supposed to feel this. This isn't supposed to happen. I remember, this is the season. In spring, I used to go out to the garden and plant new plants or things that I had grown from seed, and I sometimes would put something protective over it to keep the creatures from it. And then I went out one next morning or a morning afterwards and the bugs ate it up. It's not supposed to happen. It's all gone, nibbled down to nothing. Or the squirrel tore it out and it died overnight, dried up, being exposed like that. It's not supposed to happen. I put up a fence and somehow the squirrel got in. Even on that simple level, there's a twinge. It's not supposed to happen. If there's that twinge, then we know there's something there. Or, squirrels are ongoing change Buddha nature.
I get that twinge a lot. And I think maybe I shouldn't. I should know this.
Why not? See, I should know this is another permanence that we add on to it. When you get that twinge, fine. That's just ongoing practice opportunity, ongoing practice life, ongoing everything interdependent. Interdependent means from beginningless time, all sorts of greed, anger, and confusion arises. Its arising is just the interconnectedness. It's what we do with its arising that is our opportunity when we notice it. We can't make it not arise.
That's what I want to do, make it not arise.
That's like saying I want to make sure the rain doesn't come here. Well, sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. And if you're in the Midwest, I mean, I know a way to make to let's say get a better chance of not having rain. Go to California right now and in May, June, there's not much rain in California. But even there, occasionally, there's rain, even in these days, especially if you're near the coast or up in the mountains. You might get something. Well, if you go to Death Valley, it's even more unlikely.
In this terror management barrier, I thought, well, maybe not our practice is terror management practice. But that doesn't seem right either. But
no, it's just the opposite. It's terror embracing when terror arises. But embracing means we're able, we don't have to hold on to terror as terror. We can be this moment, therefore, we don't add on to the terror. It shouldn't be, etc., etc. If we're grieving, we just grieve. If we're sad, even if fear is here, fine. We just be fear. But being fear isn't some thing extra. It's just in this whole universe of experiencing life, it's this just fear. And fear, terror arises and passes. It's ongoing change. Therefore, the biggest terror of terror is that it's going to continue. And we're terrified that terror is going to continue. Because until it arises, we have no problems with it.
What about ongoing terror?
We do it once, one moment at a time. See, but it's important to notice where we add on. It's going to be ongoing. It's going to be ongoing. It's going to be ongoing. Therefore, we have to find what enables us to do this moment now, breathing here, breathing and experiencing it, and see what supports us. What supports us right now to include this that arises, but not to be completely enveloped and taken over by it. But it's terrifying that this might continue. But that's our thinking about it. See, that's our making it permanent and making it self-directed permanence that's going to get me where that's not the truth of who and what our life is. So finding and clarifying appropriate practice we can do together. What's the practice when this arises? And we need to use different practices according to situation. So if there's a light rain, you could go out maybe with just a jacket or an umbrella. But if it's a heavy downpour that's with lightning, maybe you need to stay inside. And if it's even stronger, you have to make sure the sump pump is working because the flooding is coming in on the edges. So according to circumstances, we have to find what's called for now. And the more we have the ability and capacity to experience it now as it is, the more we could be who we truly are in the midst of even the terror arising. It's not something magical. So we do it how we are able to, what's called for now for us to practice with the circumstances and conditions now that are our life. Not someone else's life, not some ideal life that we figured out how it should be, but how it is now. And using whatever supports. If we break a leg, we don't say, oh, I shouldn't have a broken leg, therefore I could walk with it broken and not feel pain. Or if we break a leg, we don't say, well, having a cast on it is not the right thing because I really shouldn't need a cast. No, when we need a cast, we use a cast. When we need crutches, we use crutches. So, yes, terror, all the various experiences, if we call it that, sensations and conceptions about sensations can arise because we live in this inter-being universe that in a different sense we talk about the five aspects of talking about what being human is: form, sensation, conception, discrimination, awareness, whichever way you talk about those five skandhas. Yes. That's why practice is ongoing. That's why practice is this moment, being just this moment. And being supported by our practice and supporting ourself in being our practice life moment. The Buddha didn't teach, and ancestors don't talk about these aspects for some theoretical reasons. It's not important to know these as theories, but rather because these enable us to clarify our own life practice so that we can be who we truly are, can be what this true nature that we are, which is joyous, which is non-self. But we need to be able to have the support, if I say that, so that we can be this, because we have these tendencies to not want to be this, to insist with, what should I say, sad consequences that it's something else, and therefore get the consequences that we don't want. Yes.
For a long time, because I'm a musician and practice means you sit down at the piano for an hour and you do these things.
Yes.
Then, you know, I sort of applied that to Zen practice. You sit on the cushion for a half hour and you kind of look. Then it dawned on me, practice is the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's all our life. And you know, this is my 1 year anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And things that help practice is a Sangha.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah. That's for everyone, thank you. We're all the Sangha.
Yeah.
And
yes.
And our Sangha extends to all the beings we encounter, the trees and the wind and the traffic and
the dogs.
And it, in a way, it's also music. Though you practice music in a small sense, the more you become music, then the music is, yes, there's these forms of music called what you do, piano or whatever, but then there's the ongoing music of our life, the music of the traffic and the music of the highway and the music of the wind and the music of the silence and the music of being, hearing, listening music.
And each person's music.
Yeah.
Everyone here, it sort of, I had the thought that I did the Goldberg variations and there are 30 of them, okay. And each one has certain elements that they all have. But it's like each person here is a variation of that, of life.
Yeah.
You know, some are the happy jumping ones at this point, some are the sadder ones at this point, but they all sing.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. I had a question. Okay, terror management, and we're talking about death, really. We're trying to manage our terror. So is, well, a couple of things. Is setting up things you want to get done, a kind of before your death, a terror management is a way of managing that. That's one question. And the other question is it terror management to set up in your mind what is going to happen to you after death, like, you know, the whole heaven and hell, or is it reincarnation, or is it just you know, soft blackness, or, you know, I know Joko Beck says you'll find out when you get there. All those things are terror management.
Yeah.
But are any of them true?
Well, let's say differently, whether it's skillful or not, whether it's appropriate for doing now. See, in a way, clarifying the terror is to discover that the terror is a dream that we're imposing on the reality of our life if we believe it. Not that it's not something that arises, but it arises in the midst of all the other this moment circumstance that comes together as our life. We don't have to create a fiction in order to take care of the terror. The practice is to live the reality of what our life is. Now that can include, oh, I'd like to do these things, or I want to make these plans so that I make it easy, given that such and such is going to happen, I make it easier for all the other people connected to me. That's just skillful. It's, I don't want to say what one should or shouldn't do, because it depends on our life and us seeing what's skillful and called for now. But certainly if we are getting caught up in the fear and the terror of what's going to be, then right there is our practice. Not to give us a candy to distract us, but to enable us to live right here and then to see, is the terror right here, or is it a daydream and a fear that's hindering us from functioning right now? That, so I just brought up terror management in terms of that there are these ways that people are talking about it as if death is the problem. And in a way, it's not the problem, except if we believe who and what we are is this small self-centered story. If we believe who and what we are is this separate being from the whole of this ongoing change into dependence, if I use those kinds of words, that is this present moment of us coming together. But us coming together here includes the sunlight, and the sunlight includes the sun, and the sun includes the rest of the universe. And this moment here includes the air and the trees that grew the wood, and we can go on, and all the other beings in our life, the persons and other beings that make our life this moment. The food we ate this morning and at lunch is what makes this moment we could hear and breathe and sit. So, I don't know if I've answered your question.
Well, it seems like it comes back to living in this present moment.
Yes.
And you can make plans for one's death.
That's this present moment.
Yeah. Technical type things.
Yeah.
But just don't build up some big fantasy about it.
Or see your fantasies as what they are. You want to have a fantasy? That's fine. You can fantasize. We're not setting rules. We have freedom of thought here.
Okay.
Freedom of thought is, but notice if the thoughts are getting in the way of the present moment. See, the point is to live truly as we are. Then we know all sorts of thoughts arise and pass as we are right now. Being this big mind can include all sorts of clouds arising, passing as this moment. And we need not hold on to our reactive fear of that particular cloud shape that I don't like, that I'm afraid is going to cover over the universe, and so forth. It's that. It's always this here that we truly are, and to see that the clouds are nothing but our life. And as long as we don't just stay in front of them, but also see the rest of our life, then the cloud could be here, and then the cloud could pass on. And that's the point of, if I say practice or teaching or talking about any of this, is to nurture and enable us to be intimate as our life right now. I want to continue speaking of this from a slightly different aspect tomorrow. So, I will stop now. And if in the interim somehow in your awareness another question arises, no, it won't be lost. You can bring it up hopefully tomorrow, assuming we are all here together meeting again. So, thank you all.